Okay, before we begin our meeting, a few reminders. I will ask everyone to please remember to silence your electronic devices. Also, as a reminder for our members, please ensure that you turn your microphone on when you are speaking, including when you vote, and off when you are finished. Welcome back, members. Today we have six bills on the agenda. There are several members on this committee who are presenting bills in other committees. There are other members who are here that have to present bills in other committees. So we're going to eventually get to the order of seniority. But before we do that, I would like to introduce Representative Tuck. Representative, you are recognized to explain your bill.
Maybe? There we go. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, members. This bill extends the hurricane loss mitigation program within the Division of Emergency Management and the necessary funding for 10 years. The important program is scheduled to sunset on June 30th of this year. The program includes four different categories, spending $10 million total, $2.8 million for the mobile home tie-down program, $3.5 million for local government support to improve wind resistance, $3 million for retrofitting existing public hurricane shelters, and $700,000 for hurricane-dedicated research at Florida International University. Importantly, the funding for the Hurricane Loss Mitigation Program is from the Florida Hurricane Catastrophe Fund, not from the general revenue. The program was established in 1999 and has already been extended due to success and demand. That is the bill, Mr. Chair, and we have a technical amendment as well.
Okay. Members, are there any questions on the bill? Any questions on the bill? Seeing none, Representative Tuck, you are recognized to explain Amendment 1.
It just removes a sentence that's obsolete in the statute now.
Are there any questions of Representative Tuck on Amendment 1? Any questions on Amendment 1? Seeing none, any public testimony? No pub. Yeah, we do have some public testimony on the bill, but this is no public testimony on the amendment. Members, any members wishing to debate on the bill? Excuse me, on the amendment. Seeing none, Representative Tuck, you're recognized to close on your amendment.
Wait, close.
Okay. Are there any objections to the amendment? Without objection, show the amendment adopted. Okay, members, are there any questions of Representative Tuck on the bill as amended? Okay, seeing none, we have some public testimony. We've got Nancy Stewart from the Federation of Manufactured Homes, Homeowners of Florida. Come on up, you are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Good morning. My name is Nancy Stewart, and I represent the Federation of Manufactured Homeowners of Florida. You probably are familiar with the FMO. And the FMO members are the constituents who live in mobile home parks and manufactured home communities in your districts. They're very supportive of Representative Tuck's bill. The mobile home tie-down program is very important to loss mitigation when we have our storm events. So thank you for your courtesy, and we appreciate your vote today. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Okay, no further public testimony. Members, we're in debate. Are there any members wishing to debate on the bill as amended? Seeing none, Representative Tuck, you are recognized to close.
Wave close, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Tuck waving close. On the bill, Kimberly, will you please call the roll?
Chair DeSaglie?
Yes.
Vice Chair Haig?
Yes.
Franken Democratic Member Wilhite?
Yes.
Representatives Barnaby?
Yes.
Beltran?
Yes.
Brown?
Yes.
Driscoll?
Yes.
Fetterhoff? Excused. Fabricio?
Yes.
Hardy?
Yes.
Coster?
Yes.
Brainer?
Yes.
Robinson?
Yes.
Smith C?
Yes.
Smith D?
Yes.
Snyder?
Yes.
Toledo? Zika? Bill passes.
Okay, members, by your vote, House Bill 423 will be reported favorably. Congratulations, Representative. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, member.
Okay, members, at this time we will take up House Bill 273, Motor Vehicle Insurance Coverage Exclusions, by Representative Plakin. Representative, you are recognized to explain your bill.
Good morning, Chair and members. Thank you for hearing this bill today. House Bill 273 creates the named driver exclusion under Florida Statute 627.747, which permits an insurer to identify and exclude certain members of a household from an auto insurance policy. If households have multiple drivers and cars, at one point we had 8 drivers and 10 vehicles in my family, for example, in some cases a driver may not fit within the risk profile of an insurer will underwrite. For example, if someone's driving history includes multiple tickets and driving infractions. This section would permit insurers to use the named driver exclusion to continue writing policies for a household instead of being forced to drop a household if one member does not qualify under the risk profile. This way, the family can continue to obtain affordable and desirable coverage from a standard company. The named driver will need to secure coverage from the, likely the non-standard market. That's the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Members, are there any questions on the bill? Any questions on the bill? Okay, seeing none. Representative Plakin, you are recognized to explain Amendment 1.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This just takes this bill and comports it with Florida Statute 760, which is the Florida Civil Rights Act of 1992.
Okay, members, are any questions of Representative Plakin on Amendment 1? Any questions on the amendment? Ranking Member, you are recognized for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maybe I'm reading it backwards. Thank you, Chairman Plakin. Maybe I'm reading it backwards, but it says the identified individual is being excluded because of these things. Am I reading that backwards? Should it say this individual is not being excluded because of his race, color, religion, sex, or those things?
You are recognized.
Yeah, we can't exclude based on those variables. It's
I know about
the law.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I am reading this backwards. Of course, I don't want them excluded, and I understand you are excluding drivers. But by excluding them, are you saying that you're, again, understand how I'm saying, how I'm reading this?
You're recognized.
We can't exclude. It's actually pretty obviously, and that's my reading of the language. It prevents excluding for these characteristics as outlined in the Civil Rights Act.
I think, Mr. Chairman, yep. I think the idea is it's a double exclusion here. So you're excluding them because you want to exclude them from your policy, but you can't exclude them for these reasons. Is that how I'm reading? Is that how it should be read or understood?
You can exclude.
You're recognized.
You can exclude them upon mutual consent of the insurer and the insured and the person that is being excluded, but you cannot exclude someone because of their race, religion, and the other factors that okay. are detailed in the amendment.
Mr. Chair, I think it's a double exclusion is what I'm is
okay
what I'm
I think what the amendment is saying, okay, is that the reasons that you have on the amendment, you cannot exclude for those specific reasons.
Right.
Okay, now obviously the overall bill you can, for example, a teenage driver, if they have a terrible driving record, you can exclude that licensed driver from the overall policy. Okay, but that's much different than the exclusion that is in this amendment.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Any other questions on the amendment? You are recognized, Representative Hardy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question pertains to the word solely. So for example, if race, color, religion, and so on were a factor in the person's exclusion, would that be covered by this amendment?
You are recognized.
They cannot be excluded for any of the factors outlined in the amendment, period. You cannot be excluded, and I think throughout our statutes, that's consistent in the law. You cannot exclude somebody because of these characteristics. I don't know how to better explain it.
Any other questions on the amendment? Okay. Is there any public testimony on the amendment? No public testimony on the amendment. Any members wishing to debate on the amendment? Any debate on the amendment? Seeing none, Representative Plakin, you're recognized to close on your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment was recommended by OIR and staff just to make entirely clear that this could never happen, someone be discriminated based on these characteristics. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there objections to the amendment? Without objections, show the amendment adopted. Okay, members, are there any questions of Representative Plakin on the bill as amended? Any questions on the bill as amended? Our ranking member Wilhite, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you for indulging us on that just clarification there, Chair Plakin. I'm gonna give you a scenario. Your 16-year-old child gets their driver's license, they're all excited. They go out and get their license and are irresponsible. They get two or three tickets and your insurance goes up. And under this policy, you would be allowed to exclude them from your policy. In what scenario do you see that that child could then go get insurance that's affordable to be able to drive a car and get to work?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Some of the standard companies, if you will, have very specific underwriting rules. So in some of these companies, you face a choice if you're a family, like my family, that you can either take the probably huge rate increase based on one driver's misbehavior, or they cancel you. So this creates another option where you can exclude a 16-year-old. They can go to the substandard market, get a policy that, you know, will probably cost a lot more for that individual versus raising the rates for all the drivers in the family effectively.
Follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Recognized for a follow-up.
Thank you, Chair Plakin. Chairman and Chair Plakin, it's my understanding that if you're an insured client of your vehicle and I give my vehicle to you, my insurance will cover you. If I give you my car and you're that high-risk child, does my insurance still not cover that child if I give that to them?
You're recognized.
Okay, let me state what I think the question is if you have a child in your house that you give the vehicle to, at this point, that child would be covered. Now, if your rates go up a lot, you have a choice of taking the rate increase or negotiating this exclusion essentially with the insurance company. Now, once a driver is excluded by mutual consent, then that driver, say the teenage driver, would not be covered driving the vehicles of the family. Any other person, if you lend me your car, it would be covered. But if you specifically, by mutual consent, with people over 18 years old agreeing to this contractually, then that driver would be excluded. So what it comes down to is this provides another option rather than either taking a much higher rate or be canceled.
Mr. Chair, if you'll indulge me with one last.
One last one. You are recognized.
What if my child, thank you, Chair. What if my child takes my car unwillingly? Is my insurance going to cover me if the child was mutually excluded on that policy?
You're recognized.
No. And that, again, this empowers parents. If you have that concern that your child would take it and you have excluded so that you can save your money, family. If it were me, I'd probably have the keys in a lockbox at the house or something. I mean, that's an idea, but it puts the responsibility on the family and the parents. So in order to have the car, essentially stealing it, if you will, they would have access to the keys. And that's in the control of the parents of who controls the keys.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, any other questions on the bill as amended? Representative Hardy, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In a lot of cases, as Ranking Member Wilhite was saying, this is really about younger people in the household, typically, you know, a teenage driver who may have done something irresponsible, right? And typically that person is not paying their own insurance. They typically get some help from their parents, or their parents might pay all of their insurance, right? And so while I recognize that not allowing that person to be excluded from the head of the household, for example, car insurance, means that car insurance for the head of the household is going to be higher than it would be otherwise, right? But it's not clear to me that if that person is excluded and they have to get insurance on their own, that the insurance costs borne by the household are less, right? And so I guess, you know, has there been some sort of analysis done You know, obviously that individual is going to have to carry insurance that's more expensive than someone else in the household might. You know, what's the difference? How does it tend to balance out?
You're recognized.
Well, thank you. I don't think there's actuarial studies on that, but this creates only an option. So if it were the case, post this bill passing, then a family could make a financial decision. Would we be better off to all still stay combined or to exclude this member? I suspect that there probably could be some opportunities where they would save money, because the liability for a young adult could be lower numbers versus if you have, let's say, a wealthy family that has very big limits. So that person, by being a standalone, would just provide another option for families, not a requirement.
Okay, members, any other questions on the bill as amended? Okay, on to public testimony. Josh Aubuchon, representing State Farm Florida Insurance Company. You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Josh Aubuchon, on behalf of State Farm. Just to address one or two things, the 16-year-old, if you had a 16-year-old multiple tickets, you could exclude them from the policy. But just to be clear on what the exclusions would entail, the exclusions have to be based on underwriting guidelines that are already filed with the OIR and can be analyzed for being discriminatory. So basically, to pick on myself, you couldn't say we're going to exclude everybody who habitually wears red ties, because we've shown that people that wear red ties are more aggressive drivers. So it'd have to be based on some sort of actuarial sound data to show that that exclusion would be effective. And as far as where the savings would be if you're excluding a named driver, if you've got maybe a family of four and they've been with a long time company for years and years, and they've got multi-lines and they've got discounts, but then they got one problematic driver that would need to be excluded, the options right now would be potentially to either drop the entire household or to try to exclude the driver. And so what this bill does is it fixes kind of one or two of the things in the case law and the statutes that they would allow them to exclude that one driver. And the savings then would be with the folks that are not excluded, because they might be able to continue that long-time relationship, have the discounts. And so basically the excluded driver would then need to go into an alternate insurance company and find their coverage. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We strongly support this bill.
Thank you for your testimony. Mr. Aubuchon, ranking member, I'd like to ask you a question, please. One question.
Thank you. You're recognized. It is one question, Chairman. Is there a scenario here where your agent could either say to your longtime client that had no problems and now has a 16-year-old with tickets, either you exclude them or we're dropping you no matter what?
You're recognized.
Yeah, conceivably. If the underwriting guidelines for the company, so let's say that the 16-year-old has a DUI, aside from the multiple problems that you've got there, if the auto insurer doesn't necessarily cover individuals that have had DUIs, then yes, that would be the potential option. So that you either need to exclude them, which we would, this again cleans up some of the statutory mechanics of that, or drop the entire household.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay, Carl Rasmussen from National Association of Insurance and Financial Advisors. Okay, you wave in support. Thank you very much. Okay, that's it for public testimony. Members, we are in debate on the bill as amended. Any debate? Representative Fabrizio, you are recognized in debate.
Representative Plankin, thank you so much for bringing this very good and important bill. It's much needed, and it will help families in Florida. Thank you so much.
Representative Smith, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Chair. And I'd just like, again, to thank Rep. Plankin for bringing this good bill. I think what is often misunderstood, and whether it came with actuarial tables or not, is if, as an example for Rep. Plankin and his family of eight, if Jameson had multiple tickets and was going to be needed to be excluded, your insurance carrier had already made the decision to drop the Plankin household completely unless Jameson is excluded. That's what this bill does. It allows those other seven members of your household to maintain that great rate that you have and combine with your homeowner's insurance or any other things, but that underwriter's already made the decision to drop the entire family. But by passing this bill, we'll allow named exclusion and allow families to keep the bulk of the family to keep their great insurance rate. So thank you for bringing this good bill forward.
Near the debate. Representative C. Smith, you recognize in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Plakin. Look, maybe I'm just new to banking and insurance, and forgive my not understanding why we believe this should be the solution. I understand the problem. I understand the problem that some families have when an insurer calls them and says, we're going to drop your entire family because someone in your household that's covered is extremely high risk. So I don't know if, I guess the trend in this committee is that rather than bring government solutions that require insurers to offer coverage for these types of families, instead of just saying, oh, well, the insurance companies, you know, we need to go ahead and allow them to keep doing this, and we need to, you know, allow them to jettison people from a policy because they're so-called high risk. I mean, why aren't we recommending that insurance companies require, as part of their plan, that there's some sort of accident forgiveness for families like yours? Why aren't we considering requiring that they offer, you know, these types of policies that don't force families like yours to have to go out into the market unable to find an affordable rate? I don't understand why we're not issuing more government regulations on the insurers, requiring them to offer the affordable rate, as opposed to this being the so-called solution. Maybe it's because I'm new to insurance and banking. I'm trying to understand the perspective we're trying to come from here, but I don't think that this is the right way to do it. So I'm going to be voting no. Thank you.
Representative Snyder, you are recognized in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Smith, I too am new to insurance and banking, and so perhaps this might be a little bit of the blind leading the blind here, but I think, Representative Plankin, what this good bill does, if I'm understanding it correctly, is that this allows the free market to operate as it's intended. And where there are formulas and data that show a risk category, this is not just an arbitrary exclusion, but something that's backed by strict formulas, strict regulations, and this really is a good solution that allows strong choices to remain in place and for decisions to be made by households with the relationship that they have with their local agent. So thank you for this good bill, and proud to support it.
Any other debate? Representative Hardy in debate. You're recognized.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. It's not clear to me that the household saves as a result of this change. You know, it was said that if you've got an 8-member household and you've got one irresponsible driver, it allows the other 7 members of the household to maintain that great coverage. But again, it's not clear to me that those other 7 members, because this is a family, this is a household, it's not clear to me that they're not going to bear the costs of that irresponsible person who isn't a stranger, but a family member. It's not clear to me that they're not going to bear the cost of that person's higher insurance coverage separately. And it's not clear to me that the difference between having them added to those for the whole household's coverage and having them separated out is actually going to result in a net savings. The other thing is that, you know, there are some red flags for me here that were borne out by questioning by fellow members. The idea that a 16-year-old could be conceivably excluded from coverage under a household, not because he's done anything during his short history as a driver, but simply because he's turned 16 and 16-year-olds are risky, that's concerning to me. In addition, the idea that if someone grabs the keys and leaves, with the car and gets into an accident, that the policyholder won't be covered. That is extremely concerning to me. And, you know, it was said that, you know, a person can only be excluded from a policy based on stuff that's approved by the OIR, you know, the terms of these insurance contracts, you know, that are approved in form filings by the OIR. You know, first off, the OIR has a lot to do in such a short period of time. They've got to approve these form filings in 30 days. Now, there's not a lot of time to review. But in addition to that, the Florida Insurance Consumer Advocate has not really been included in the review of these form filings. And so while you can say, well, yes, the OIR approved, you know, these contracts, these terms, it's not clear to me that the terms that are being approved really work for consumers here in the state of Florida. And so I have lots of questions and concerns about this bill. I'm not able to vote for it at this time. This is a sticky wicket. It's a challenge, but I think this challenge is met by asking insurance companies, or rather requiring them through regulation, as Representative Smith said, to do better by consumers in the state of Florida, and not to encourage them or license them to engage in this race to the bottom. Thank you.
Any other debate? Members, any other debate on the bill as amended? Okay, seeing none, Representative Plakin, you're recognized to close on your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To address a few of the comments by Representative Hardy, there's nothing in this bill that would cost more for the family. It only presents a possibility for it to cost less for the family. So again, current law, likely with a 17-year-old driver with a DUI, their rates are going to go up a lot, double, triple, just a lot for the whole family. So again, this only provides another option. If it costs more to split them out, probably the family will simply stay on the same policy, or they can rescind the driver's license of a 16-year-old. In some cases, that probably needs to happen when some 16-year-old drivers act. So in Representative Smith's comments, he brought up, you know, for example, mandating insurance companies to have accident forgiveness. What you're really saying is you're going to tax, if you will, all the other policies that have not had accidents. So the inevitable conclusion, if you have, if you require accident forgiveness, is rates go up. Now, I got to tell you, families around our state are struggling, and some of these solutions of more regulations would result in more in rate increases. Now, here in Florida, we've had some of the even large insurers have had challenges with on property with some of our dynamics of hurricanes, on auto with so many uninsured drivers. So they already have their challenges. So if you were to require that, you're really just raising rates on everybody else, in my view. One of the things that Mr. Aubuchon referred to, and I've heard once or twice here, is a lot of families have had an insurance agent that really has helped consult over the years. From when the, let's say, a couple in their 20s, it's an insurance agent that they're with for sometimes decades, and then they have their kids or teenagers and then grown adults navigating this financial things like property and auto, umbrella policies, and all this. In effect, without the passage of this law, and you have one bad driver, you're going to lose that voice for your family. And I think we should create another option where they can have that voice, continue to speak into their family. I mentioned my family. We had I have six kids. So that was eight drivers at one point. We had 10 vehicles, that included my motorcycle and my RV, and we had half of the kids were involved in an accident. We had two accidents where people that were borrowing our vehicle had accidents. One of them was $5,000 in damage, the other was $8,000. Thankfully, nobody has been hurt in all of this. But this would have given my family more options other than the skyrocket rates that we had to pay. I think it was close to either $15,000 or $20,000 a year we were paying for this for our family altogether with all the different things that sometimes happen with teenagers. So again, to close, this compared to the status quo, it only gives another option. And again, if that option is not financially beneficial for the family, they don't have to choose the option. But that occurs.
Representative Plankin, having closed on the bill, Kimberly, will you please call the roll?
Chair DeSegley?
Yes.
Vice Chair Haig?
Yes.
Ranking Democratic Member Wilhite?
No.
Representatives Barnaby?
Yes.
Beltran?
Yes.
Brown?
Yes.
Driscoll?
Yes.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Fetterhoff, excused. Hardy?
No.
Coster?
Yes.
Rayner?
Yes.
Robinson?
Yes.
C. Smith?
No.
D. Smith?
Yes.
Snyder?
Yes.
Toledo? Zika? The bill passes, Mr. Chair.
Members, by your vote, House Bill 273 will be reported favorably. Congratulations, Representative. Thank you.
Thank you.
Members, we will now take up House Bill 717, Consumer Protection, by Representative Clemens. Representative, you are recognized to explain your bill before we take up the amendments.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Ranking Member and members of the committee. I appreciate the opportunity this morning to present some good consumer protection language in House Bill 717. This bill comprises the CFO Jimmy Patronis's 2021 consumer protection package. In the bill, we eliminate fees from statutes that are unfair to consumers. We work hard to support the CFO's fraud-free Florida initiative by furthering consumer protections in the insurance industry. We provide parity between the domestic and the surplus insurers, requiring insurance companies to fulfill their policy obligations within 90 days and settle those claims here in Florida. And we're using lessons learned from Hurricane Michael to empower consumers, encourage communications between the insurance industry and policyholders, and help to strengthen the best practices in the industry. That is the bill, Mr. Chairman, and there are two amendments.
Hey, members, are there any questions on the bill? Any questions on the bill? Okay, Representative Clemens, you are recognized to explain amendment number one.
Thank you, Chair DeSegley. Amendment one is 133817, sir. It's a technical amendment clarifying, Mr. Chair, to ensure there isn't a conflict between two existing statutes. And in the section of the bill, we outline exemptions from
Representative Clemens, you're explaining amendment number two.
Oh, well, that's just the way they were in my book, sir.
So, okay.
I'm sorry.
Yeah,
that's okay. That's why I said the number.
Okay, so let's go ahead and back up, and I'll recognize you to explain amendment one. What's that?
193781, Ned.
You are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I apologize for my confusion. This amendment is removing another fee from statute. We're establishing the registration and licensure of the public adjustment firms, but our intent is for this to be a free license. So unfortunately, there's already a fee in this statute, so we're striking the fee to meet our intent of a free license. That's the amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, members, are there any questions on amendment number one? Any questions on amendment number one? Is there any public testimony? No public testimony on the amendment. Members, any debate on the amendment? Any debate on amendment one? Seeing none, Representative Clemens, you are recognized to close on your amendment.
I'll waive, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Are there any objections? Without objection, show the amendment adopted. Representative Clemens, you are recognized to explain amendment number two.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is amendment 133817, and as I wrongfully explained before, is to assure there's not a conflict with an existing statute. We're outlining exemptions from licensure in the adjustment services. That's the amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any questions on the amendment? Amendment number two. Okay. Any public testimony on amendment? No public testimony. Any debate on amendment number two? Members, any debate? Seeing none, Representative Clemens, you are recognized to close on your amendment.
I'll waive, Mr. Chairman.
Are there any objections? Without objection, show the amendment adopted. Okay, members, we are now... Are there any questions of Representative Clemens on the bill as amended? Representative Driscoll, you are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good morning, Chair Clemens. I had a question. A few weeks back, we had an update and presentation from Tasha Carter, the insurance consumer advocate, and she'd made a number of recommendations for legislative policy proposals that we could consider. Are any of those recommendations included in the bill?
You are recognized.
Mr. Chairman, yes, they are included. The insurance advocate was sitting at the table when these changes were formulated. I can't answer with specificity how many of her suggestions are in this, but there are representatives from the CFO's office here, and they may be able to give you some specificity in that, but Ms. Carter is an integral part of the team for the CFO.
Thank you.
One follow-up, go ahead, you recognize?
Yes, thank you. And I noticed there were some changes to what's gonna happen with the surplus lines and the export to surplus lines. And from the staff analysis, it says the bill mandates that the notification regarding the export of a policy to the surplus lines market, currently given only to commercial policyholders, must now be given to all policyholders. Would you be able to talk to us a little bit about why that change is there? Was there something happening in the market, or what was happening in the market, I guess, that led to that proposal in the bill?
Mr. Chairman?
You are recognized.
If I might, I would ask Meredith Stanfield from the CFO Jimmy Patronis' office, head of legislative affairs. She can answer your question with much fewer words than I could. Is that permissible?
Yep, that's fine. Come on up.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for your question.
You're recognized.
We want to make sure that consumers understand that their policy is being exported into the surplus lines market. Prior to that placement, there are some protections that we have in the Florida Insurance Code, and they are important. You guys worked hard to pass them, and we just want to make sure that folks understand that their coverage is being exported prior to its placement.
Thank you for that clarification.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Any other questions? Okay. On to public testimony. Meredith Stanfield, Department of Financial Services. She waves in support. Thank you. Timothy Meenan, NAIFA, Florida. Waving in support. Thank you. Greg Thomas, Department of Financial Services. Waves in support. Thank you. That concludes the public testimony. Members, we are in debate. Any members wishing to debate on the bill? Representative David Smith, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair, and I'd just like to take the opportunity to, again, thank the rep for bringing this good bill forward, in particular, an aspect that I like that cracks down on the unlicensed, in particular in Seminole, Orange, Osceola, and Lake County, the solo area with roofing and with adjusters that are unlicensed. That is a tremendous problem in my district and in Central Florida with those unlicensed. And this bill, good bill, takes steps to rein in those people and the fly-by-night roofers. So thank you very much, Rep.
Any other debate? Members? Okay, seeing none, Representative Clemens, you are recognized to close on your bill.
I'll waive.
Having waived close, Representative Clemens, having closed on the bill, Kimberly, will you please call the roll?
Chair DeSegley?
Yes.
Vice Chair Haig?
Yes.
Ranking Democratic Member Wilhite?
Yes.
Representatives Barnaby?
Yes.
Beltran?
Yes.
Brown?
Yes.
Driscoll?
Yes.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Fetterhoff excused. Hardy?
Yes.
Coster?
Yes.
Rayner?
Yes.
Robinson?
Yes.
C. Smith?
Yes.
D. Smith?
Yes.
Snyder?
Yes.
Toledo? Zika? Bill passes. Chairman.
Members, by your vote, House Bill 717 will be reported favorably. Congratulations, Representative.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, members.
Okay, members, we will now take up House Bill 733, Credit for Reinsurance. This is sponsored by Representative Federhoff. She's not able to be here today, so I'm going to recognize the Whip Beltran. Representative, you are recognized to explain the bill.
Thank you, Chairman. Insurance companies in Florida typically obtain reinsurance policies for to limit their coverage, limit their individual exposure and spread that risk. A lot of that coverage is purchased in the European market, and this bill expands the opportunity for those insurers to seek coverage in the European market and therefore facilitate their options for purchasing reinsurance. That is the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative. Members, are there any questions on the bill? Any questions on the bill? Seeing none, any public testimony? Timothy Meenan, Florida Insurance Council, waves in support, thank you. Allison City, Office of Insurance Regulation, she waves in support, thank you. Okay, that concludes public testimony. Members, we are in debate. Any debate on the bill? Any debate on the bill? Okay, seeing none, Representative Beltran, you're recognized to close on the bill.
Waive close, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Beltran, having waived close on the bill, Ms. Kimberly, please call the roll.
Chair DeSegley?
Yes.
Vice Chair Haig?
Yes.
Ranking Democratic Member Wilhite?
Yes.
Representatives Barnaby?
Yes.
Beltran?
Yes.
Brown?
Yes.
Driscoll?
Yes.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Federhoff, excused. Hardy?
Yes.
Foster?
Yes.
Rayner?
Yes.
Robinson?
Yes.
C. Smith?
Yes.
D. Smith?
Yes.
Snyder?
Yes.
Toledo? Great. Zika? The bill passes, Mr. Chair.
Okay, members, by your vote, House Bill 733 will be reported favorably. Thank you, Representative. Okay, members, we will now take up House Bill 797, Florida Life and Health Insurance Guarantee Association by Representative Robinson. Representative Robinson, you are recognized to explain your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House Bill 797 is a bill that updates Part 3 of Chapter 631, which establishes the Florida Life and Health Insurance Guarantee Association, or FLHIGA, by adding conforming language contained in the Model National Association Insurance Commissioners Life and Health Insurance Guarantee Model Act, which is attempted to be the same in all 50 states. FLHIGA is the safety net that pays the policyholder claims of insolvent life, annuity, health, and long-term care insurance companies should they be rendered insolvent. These changes include clarifying that FLHIGA can assume and reissue policies, remove unnecessary and outdated caps, remove a reduced assessment level levied on nonprofit annuity insurers, placing them on par with other annuity insurers, and granting the power of FLHIGA board to remove a member insurer board member if that insurer becomes impaired or insolvent. That's the bill, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. Members, any questions on the bill? Any questions on the bill? Okay, seeing none, is there any public testimony? Timothy Meenan, Florida Life and Health Insurance Guarantee Association.
I'll just wave in support of all the bills
today. Thank you. He waves in support. All right. No further public testimony. Members, we're in debate. In debate on the bill. Seeing no debate on the bill, Representative Robinson, you are recognized to close.
I'll wave close, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Okay. Having waved closed, Kimberly, please call the roll.
Chair DeSegley?
Yes.
Vice Chair Hague?
Yes.
Ranking Democratic Member Wilhite?
Yes.
Representatives Barnaby?
Yes.
Beltran?
Yes.
Brown?
Yes.
Driscoll?
Yes.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Fetterhoff, excused. Hardy?
Yes.
Coster?
Yes.
Rayner?
Yes.
Robinson?
Yes.
C. Smith?
Yes.
D. Smith?
Yes.
Snyder?
Yes.
Toledo?
Yes.
Zika? The bill passes, Mr. Chair.
Members, by your vote, House Bill 797 will be reported favorably.
Thank you.
Okay, members, we have one bill to go. Representative Barnaby. Okay, members, we will take up House Bill 619, Public Records, Application for a De Novo Banking Charter by Representative Barnaby. Representative Barnaby, you are recognized to explain your first bill in the House of Representatives before we take up the amendment. You are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members. Currently, when an application is filed for the formation of a De Novo bank, most of the application is public record, with only certain reductions allowed. HB 619 will allow the application information to be protected during the application phase. In order to protect the details of the application that could hamper organizing groups' ability to recruit and hire key employees who may not wish to have public disclosure of their intent to join a group that it is in organization due to the negative impact it could have on their current job. Without passing this bill, organizing groups are hesitant to disclose the identity of certain key officers at the beginning of the application process, which can complicate the regulatory approval process. Therefore, the removal of this barrier will allow the OFR to better and more expediently evaluate the applications. That's the bill.
Okay, thank you, Representative. Members, are there any questions on the bill? Representative Driscoll, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, and good morning, Representative Barnaby. I had a question. In the staff analysis, it mentioned that we have two different regulatory schemes for regulating our banks. We have the state system and the federal system.
Oh, yeah.
And I was just curious, in your preparation for this bill or research of it, do you know if the information that you're attempting to exempt through your bill, if that's available for banks that are regulated at the federal level?
Thank you.
You are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for that good question, Representative Driscoll. Here with me today are experts from the OFR that could better explain that for you, that question. I believe they are here. And I'd like them to come to the podium and explain that for you on your behalf.
And just to clarify, you're Jeremy Smith?
Yes, Representative.
You are recognized.
Thank you, Representative. Regarding your question, at the federal level, an institution that's in formation, that information would not be publicly available as it is at the state level. So it creates an opportunity where a federal charter would have some advantages to, you know, seeking a state charter in the initial organization process and application process, and this is attempting to remedy that.
You're recognized for a question.
Thank you. Is this typical practice that you've seen in other states to exempt this information from, this sort of information from public record?
You're recognized.
Thank you. That's a great question. Some states, yes, it is protected. I don't have a list of, you know, how many states is that information made publicly available or not. But in some states, yes, it would be protected.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Smith. Representative Robinson, you're recognized for a question.
Mr. Chair, if you would indulge, we have a series of questions.
We'll go ahead and go through the chair.
Thank you, sir. It's been a while since I've been in law school, but I was just curious, is de novo a Greek or a Latin phrase word?
You are recognized to answer that question in full detail.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Robinson, we'll get back to you on that later.
Follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Representative Robinson, you are recognized for a question. Follow-up.
What does de novo mean?
Representative, you are recognized.
We'll ask Siri, Mr. Robinson.
One more follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Last follow-up. You're recognized.
So my understanding is it's from the beginning. So bank from the beginning. How long is a bank de novo?
You are recognized.
I have no idea, Mr. Robinson.
Thank you, Mr. Thank you. Thank you, sir.
Any other questions? Any other questions on the bill? Representative Smith, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Barnaby, for the bill. I'm curious, I guess I want to follow on what Rep. Driscoll was asking about some of the public records exemptions, just because I'm trying to understand the justification for certain portions of the records exemptions. So am I understanding your bill accurately or correctly in that we're going to exempt the personally identifying information for proposed officers and directors of these new state banks that we're not gonna know who any of those people are under your bill?
You are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to clarify, Representative Smith, to be accurate and correct, I have the OFR here with me today, and they will be happy to give you an answer. Mr. Chair, recognize the gentleman from
the OFR. Come on up. You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The information would be protected during the application process. Once the institution becomes chartered, the information of who the executive officers and directorate of that institution are is obviously going to be public.
You are recognized for a follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the answer. I guess I'm just trying to understand what some of the unintended consequences might be of this records exemption. If one of these proposed officers or directors at this bank was involved in any sort of fraud or money laundering or any other violations of banking regulations in other states, wouldn't we not know about that in advance because of the fact that their personally identifying information is shielded from public record at the beginning of the process?
You're recognized.
Thank you for the question. We, in approving or reviewing individuals that are part of an application, both the directorate, shareholders, and executive officers, they go through an extensive background check. Part of the qualification that they need to meet is the character and reputation. The items that you described in practice would most likely disqualify them and create a challenge for that application to move forward with that individual or individuals if there's more than one with those types of issues involved in the application.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Members, any other questions on the bill? Okay, Representative Barnaby, you are recognized to explain amendment number one.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment aligns the House bill with the Senate bill and more clearly identifies the categories of records and information covered by the exemption, which makes the exemption more feasible for the record custodian. It also more completely covers the sensitive personal, financial, and business information contained in an application to establish a new state chartered bank. Finally, it conforms the statement of public necessity to the changes made to the exemption. And that's the amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you, Representative. Members, are there any questions of Representative Barnaby on amendment number one? Any questions on the amendment? Public testimony on the amendment. We have Jeremy Smith. I'm sorry. No. Okay. No public testimony on the amendment, but we do have public testimony on the bill as amended. Members, are there anyone wishing to debate on the amendment? Seeing none, Representative Barnaby, you are recognized to close on your amendment.
I waive close, Mr. Chair.
Okay, are there any objections? Without any objection, show the amendment adopted. Okay, members, we are now in questions of Representative Barnaby on the bill as amended. Are there any questions on the bill as amended? Okay, seeing none, public testimony. Jeremy Smith from the Office of Financial Regulation. He's waving in support. That concludes public testimony. Members, are there anyone wishing to debate? We are in debate. Representative Fabrizio, you are recognized in debate.
Representative Barnaby, thank you so much for bringing this good bill forward. It will help continue to help strengthen the economy in the state of Florida and attract more business. Thank you so much.
Representative Snyder, you are recognized in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Rep. Barnaby, a great bill. This is pro-competition, removing barriers to entry. And thank you for bringing this good bill forward.
Representative C. Smith, you are recognized in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Barnaby. Unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to support this bill. I want the members of this committee to understand that the First Amendment Foundation is also opposed to this legislation. And the reasons why are really, really important. I appreciate the answers that we got from OFR on the fact that they are vetting some of these individuals, the shareholders, the proposed officers, the directors. But the reality is that the public still needs to get this information. Florida has a very well-established standard of transparency and sunshine. And I don't think that it's appropriate to shield the personally identifying information of shareholders, subscribers, proposed officers, and directors who possibly could have been involved in money laundering and fraud and other violations in other states. I think it sets a bad precedent. I think it makes sense to be okay with exempting some of the personally identifying information like driver licenses or ID numbers, but not providing the names of all of the individuals that would be involved in these new state banks, I think does not make sense for us. And that's why I'm going to be voting against the bill. So thank you.
Representative Beltran, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We were here in Commerce the other day. We heard about the First Amendment Foundation. Now we're hearing about it again. I think there's a substantial overlap in the memberships on the two committees. If people have opinions of their own, opinions from their constituents, opinions from stakeholders, that's fine. Maybe the First Amendment Foundation is a stakeholder here. But let's think for ourselves here and not defer to the First Amendment Foundation. They didn't vote for any one of us. I don't know where they are. They haven't come to see me. As for Representative Smith's concerns, this information will come to light. This bill, as I understand it, provides for the information to be kept confidential while these folks are setting up the bank, presumably while they're employed elsewhere and want to keep their jobs in the event that the charter is not approved. And I trust the banking regulators in this state to uncover any money laundering or other malfeasance, either during the application process or after. And those folks, as we've heard from the agency, would be excluded. And that's something that you can be fired for if that that comes to light. But we do want to promote competition, so I'll be up on the bill. Thank you.
Any other debate? Seeing none, Representative Barnaby, Representative Hardy, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Mr. Chair. Here's what I'll say. Florida has probably the best public records laws in the United States of America. That's something I'm proud of as a Floridian. It enables the public to better hold folks who, for example, hold an office of public trust accountable. It enables members of the public to weigh in on critical matters and to do so with information that they need to develop an informed opinion. And I don't want to see our public records laws chipped away. And that's what this exemption does. And I'm not sure that this is a minor exemption that's being added here. The public loses a lot so that a few can gain. And if the way that we have to promote banking and business formation in the state of Florida is by also licensing secrecy and by throwing a pall over applications like this, then that's not the way that I prefer to compete. And I'm not sure that that's good for the state of Florida. You know, the other thing is we all come from different backgrounds here in this legislature. And it is important for us to hear from organizations like the First Amendment Foundation, probably as important as it is for us to hear from organizations like the Chamber of Commerce. And I would expect any member to listen to experts and weigh the counsel of these experts against their own common sense. And I would expect that if a member comes into this room or any room in this building or in the Capitol and quotes something by such an expert, that they're doing so in good faith and not simply lazily outsourcing their thinking to another. I respect members who have the humility to listen to others, and I would hope that we all come into this room as informed as we can be.
Representative Snyder, you are recognized for a debate on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and my apologies, members, for double dipping here in debate. But just to bring this back to the substance of the bill, and I think it's important that we don't miss the mark on this, is that what this bill does really is loosening the stranglehold that the big banks sometimes can have on our economy. And what urged me to vote yes and support this bill is the fact that there are certain banks that have paid staffers specifically targeting these online records when people begin to start this application process. Again, transparency and operating under the sunshine is paramount to how we do business here in Florida, and those records will come to the light. However, when big banks are monitoring these application processes and individuals are trying to step out and bring competition to the marketplace, they can face dire consequences and perhaps lose their job in the infancy stages of starting that application process. Furthermore, it hampers the ability to recruit top talent, again, in those formation stages. And so once that comes to light, we all have the ability to see and know who participated in that process. The reviewers of those banking charters still have the ultimate say in vetting those individuals who have filed that charter. And so again, I think as we close up on this, it's important to know that this will come to light and that this is simply a step to shield individuals who are trying to fulfill the American dream and starting their own business. And so for that reason, I urge all members to support this good bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Any other debate, members? Okay, seeing none, Representative Barnaby, you are recognized to close on your bill.
Mr. Chair, I want to thank you. I want to thank all the members for their comments. It's interesting to note that today I have called upon the experts that are here today, that is the Office of Financial Regulations, simply because we are here as a collective body. There is safety in the multitude of numbers. And that's why I called upon the Office of Financial Regulations. I do have great respect for the First Amendment, as I do for other groups that come before this body from time to time. But our experts here today that have the oversight on this committee in reference to banking applications are indeed respected experts, and I would hope that my representatives that are on this illustrious committee can respect the fact that when I asked the OFR to come before you and explain some of your questions that are being asked, that you respect the fact that they are giving you just that, expert answers. So thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the opportunity to present this wonderful bill, and I look forward to its passage.
Okay, Representative Barnaby, having closed on the bill, Ms. Kimberly, please call the roll.
Chair DeSegley?
Yes.
Vice Chair Haig?
Yes.
Ranking Democratic Member Wilhite?
Yes.
Representatives Barnaby?
Yes.
Beltran?
Yes.
Brown?
No.
Driscoll?
No.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Vetterhoff, excused. Hardy?
No.
Coster?
Yes.
Rayner?
No.
Robinson?
Yes.
C. Smith?
No.
D. Smith?
Yes.
Snyder?
Yes.
Toledo?
Yes.
Zika? The bill passes, Mr. Chair.
Members, by your vote, House Bill 619 will be reported favorably. And Representative, I want to congratulate you. I was going to give you a hard time, but Representative Robinson took care of that. But you have an incredible American story, and you got your first bill in the Florida House of Representatives out of its first committee. I'm sure that this will be a day that you will remember for the rest of your life, and I'm honored to be part of that. So on behalf of this committee, I want to congratulate you for getting your first bill up and out of committee.
Thank you.
Congratulations, sir.
Thank you.
Okay, members, if there's no further business, this concludes our agenda for today's meeting. I want to thank everybody for the good work on this committee. Representative Haig moves, we rise, and without objection, this meeting is adjourned.